gets colder. My eyes go thin as I get older. Piece in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused. 'Cause I hear screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life. 'Cause I can't stop the war.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Evelyn Pringle. Welcome you to Focus on the Facts. And I'm very happy today to have a guest, Martha Rosenberg. She's a great investigative journalist that investigates the drug companies and food scandals and things like that. And what we're going to be talking about today is basically how the pharmaceutical industry managed to invent mental diseases so that they could sell the new psychiatric drugs, which the whole history goes back to like around 1987 when Prozac came out, the first SSRI antidepressant. And you have to remember that they know when they're going to be bringing out drugs far in advance. And so they plotted this out with putting up pharma front groups like NAMI and other front groups to push these drugs on kids. And then went on with the American Psychiatric Profession, that group, and invented disorders to drug these kids with and stuck them in the DSM manual. And so we're going to be talking a lot about that and the process, how that moved along. And in the meantime, as it moved along, you can watch in articles that I wrote and stuff, you can watch that the pharma profits just escalated. The more they got kids on drugs, the more profits they made by selling these drugs. And then as they did this, the drug prices would go up in price. So by the end, the last time I was tracking those drug prices, I think it was probably about 2012, you know, it was into the billions of dollars it had went. And they knew they had these new psychiatric drugs, just the SSRI and the depressants, but they are also coming out with new antipsychotics. And so, and then moved on to epilepsy drug, but made them into mood stabilizers, say. And so they just progressed on this, and last I was checking, I remember reporting that checking Medicaid records down in Florida, they had infants less than a year old on these antipsychotics. Now, I never could tell what they supposedly prescribed these for these antipsychotics for infants under a year old, what disease did they believe they had. But anyhow, then we went into tracking down the money, how much they paid doctors and psychiatrists at big universities. And we found out that the doctors at big universities would do trials and say that these drugs work for this disorder or that disorder in kids. We're all getting money under the table from the drug companies, millions of dollars. And these were the head psychiatrists at these universities doing these studies. And whatever study they did, say if it was like Johnson & Johnson's Risperdal, well then they would put out studies that said it worked for children. And most of the time where they were prescribing these drugs to children, they weren't approved for children, okay? Then the FDA came in, and we fought and fought, and it took years for them to put on warnings about SSRIs causing suicide. And so in the meantime, while they're doing this, since those drugs came out and they started putting people on them, that's when all these school shootings and stuff came up. They were on these antidepressants, and you've got such horrible side effects to them that it caused to go into these states and do these bizarre things. So we never got the labels on the antidepressants, and I think it was 2004. But I think the groups were trying to get them on probably since 1989 or something like that, and they fought and fought and wouldn't put it on. Well, all those drugs cause suicide. So the habit is to prescribe a bunch of those drugs to people, taking them every day, and they all cause you to get suicidal. So, I mean, the cumulative effect is terrible. But I want to get Martha on here. She's really been writing more about the drug companies and food scandals also. And I want to get her on here and talk about it. We talked yesterday, and we have a clear picture in our head. Her and I have written articles together, and we've discussed a lot of these things. So I'm going to welcome Martha on now and get her input on this.
Well, hi there, Evie. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. It's
very
great
good to have you. Very good to have you.
Thank you, Salt. You know, I was just sitting here appreciating your narrative about, you know, since 1887 when the Prozac SSRIs, and you gave a really good synopsis of how things have gone since then. Very good. And I don't even know where to begin because there's so many points. You know, the kids, I don't know if any of the listeners remember Rebecca Riley, but she was given these drugs at 2 years old, and by 4 years old, she was found dead. You know, so like you say, why are we giving these babies, you know?
Right, right. And her brother and sister, too, had been put on those drugs real early, too, with bipolar disorder.
No. Right. And it's, you know, that is child abuse to the nth degree, and, you know, that's just one part of this. But, you know, what happened, I believe, in 87 or so, the late 80s, when that SSRIs debuted, is that there was a whole new plan to sell depression, because up until then the antidepressants were tricyclics and they had a lot of unpleasant side effects. They also had a pretty bad safety profile, so if you took too much, you know, you would die. And so here come the SSRIs, and Big Pharma said, oh, these are miracle drugs, you know, whatever your problem is, you know, kind of thing. Well, they really didn't cure depression any better than the tricyclics. And, you know, they were advertised as not causing, you know, some of the side effects, but really they just didn't test them long enough because they wanted to make money, you know. And but what began happening is they began selling depression. And, you know, whoever you are, whatever your problem is, it's depression.
Right.
And you know, that I can remember, because I've been writing about these things for a long time, when depression was self-limiting. You know, you have a depression, it's terrible, it will end. It wasn't a lifelong condition. And Big Pharma created, you know, the major depression disorder, which is a lifelong condition, you know, ka-ching. You know, so you have to treat it lifelong for the with the drugs. Then, you know, they began creating what they called treatment-resistant depression, which let them double and triple their drug take, because, you know, your antidepressant isn't working, so you need to add, you know, what, Abilify at $1,200 a month. And, of course, what I thought, you know, as a reporter is, well, maybe you didn't have depression. Maybe you have a bad job. Maybe you have a bad marriage, you know. Maybe you're broke like the whole world. You know, it's not... You know, this whole idea of happy pills, everybody should be ecstatically happy for no reason, you know?
Right. And wasn't it coincidental that, you know, when these school shootings and stuff started, it happened right then when those drugs came out? I mean, I think the first was like a post office. A guy shot up his friends at a post office or something. And
You're absolutely right. These... Because there used to be, well, there still is a website called SSRI Stories. The lady who founded it passed away in the last couple of years, but I think that the site is still up there. And all it is a collection of news stories, you know, from major newspapers that cite these drugs in bizarre, you know, activities. And I used to talk to that lady. I can't remember her name anymore, but
Rosie something or other.
Yes, exactly. She was a wonderful lady, and she was just compiling news. You know, she wasn't editorializing, just compiling the news reports. And I used to pour through there, and a lot of these people were like fire crimes, you know, where they'd like set them. I shouldn't laugh because it's really terrible, but like they'd set themselves on fire and things like that.
Right.
We never saw that before. These drugs, Evie. We just never saw it. She said, Rosie said that until these SSRIs, and I'm not so much sure the atypicals, I think it was mostly the SSRIs, you never saw women, you know, mothers, grandmothers, teachers, being sexual molesters. And then
right,
you began seeing, you know, like a kindergarten teacher would, like, molest her kids. And, you know,
right.
Rosie said these never occurred as crimes.
Yeah, I don't remember that either. Yeah.
And you know, there was, you know, the parents, just bizarre stuff that could only be understood in light of weird drugs people were on. There was a case in Australia where this man followed his post, his, you know, letter carrier and beat him up for bringing him junk mail. And, you know, and then the story said, you know, because he was on these drugs. So, yeah, I mean, the and, of course, the shooting. So then you add the guns into the equation, and it's just, it's frightening. And it never occurred. You had a few mass shooters, you know, here and there through history, but they really began, like you say, the postal thing. Then you had the Columbine. You had, you know, all these recent ones, the Aurora, the
right.
Virginia Tech. And sometimes what these mental cases have done is they've gone off the drugs because, you know, the drugs are dangerous when you go on them and when you go off them. And, of course, when you're on them, too. But you know what I'm saying? A lot of times that crazy behavior begins when somebody has curtailed their drug real abruptly, and that was what they said about the Virginia Tech guy.
And as you're saying this, what you're saying, the things that drew you to these stories, that was the same thing with me, that I went to a protest out in Washington they were having against, you know, these drugs and them not putting the warnings on them and stuff. And
right.
I talked to people, parents and family members of their family that killed themselves, you know. And that's what caught me, these bizarre suicides and murders that the women did. Because women, historically, don't shoot their brains out or things like this because I think it goes back to vanity. They don't want to look bad in the casket. You know,
well,
women would take pills or do things. They
also,
wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't do things like this. One that stuck me the most was this daughter that stabbed herself to death in the kitchen with a knife while her mother slept right in the next room. Now, she had to keep stabbing herself to kill herself, and she kept doing that. And then one, like, that you brought up, too, that had set herself on fire.
Right.
And another one that was a woman that had...
Hello? Hello?
It's colder. My eyes go thin as I get older. Piece in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused. Cause I hear screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life. Tried and true in tribulation. Love is lost and lonely. Check the news.
See, not a devil, keep enticing me. All you see is a felon. I know God can see what's right in me. How I can be labeled as a villain in the first place, when the worst case scenario was my birthplace. I'm just trying to keep from falling victim to the murder rate. Take my life lesson, convincing the adolescent that a God up in heaven sending down blessings, and you get your way brighter than your present. Quit stress, screaming on the left and yelling on the right, while I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life.
The homeless, feed the poor. I can't walk on water. I can't save your sons and daughters. Well, I can't change the world and make things fair.
Hello, Martha.
I'm here.
We got lost somehow with the phone messed up. But anyhow, I guess we were talking about, you know, these strange suicides and strange deaths and the way they killed other people, too. The one that stuck in my mind was that first went to trial up there in Minnesota. A grandfather had killed his wife, his daughter, and his newborn grandbaby, and then stabbed himself to death after he did those three. And he had just been on Paxil for, I think it was only days when he did this.
You know, there's no question in my mind that it's those drugs. And what I marvel at is why the nation and the medical establishment doesn't see that, because it's chillingly uniform, you know, like the violence against families. But, you know, you mentioned the stabbing, and I'd like anybody who's listening to get my book. You can get it out of the public library. It's called Born with a Junk Food Deficiency, How Flax, Quacks, and Hacks Pimp the Public Health. And in my book, I go into a lot of this, and I talk about this case of two ladies who I extensively interviewed, in both cases their husbands were doctors, okay? And one of these two doctors, they both killed themselves on psychoactive drug. But in one case, just as you say, Evie, he stabbed himself to death. Now, to stab yourself to death, it's like burning yourself to death. You're out of your gourd. No normal. I don't care if you're depressed. You might shoot yourself. You might jump. But those are crimes that you're just out of your gourd. That we never heard of stuff like that.
Exactly. Exactly. And then giving it to such young kids and stuff, too, then they're doing these crimes, and they end up in jail for life. You know, that kid over there, I won't remember what, but it was a big case where a boy killed his grandparents. You know, and this was a case where the boy adored his grandparents, and then it came out later in the trial that the aunt, the grandparents' daughter, felt so bad because that boy had called her and told her that there was something wrong with him. He didn't know what, but that he couldn't sit still and he couldn't sleep and he couldn't, you know. But there was no way she could get to him, so she didn't take it that seriously. Well, he was having this akathisia that they get.
Well, that's
before they do
exactly
these things.
What it is. And, you know, the sad thing, Evelyn, is that it's very hard to prove this in court. And you know, that's how Big Pharma gets away with this, because they'll say, you know, they always say with these psychiatric drug side effects, well, the person had mental illness anyway. And
right.
You know, they're slippery. They're, you know, just so sneaky. And,
in that case I was talking about, the drug company, I think it was Pfizer for Zoloft, even helped a prosecuting attorney, gave him manuals and information on all their expert witnesses and stuff so that it could help throw the case. I mean, and this is how they'll
back together. Do you remember Cymbalta?
Yeah.
Cymbalta, it's not an SSRI, but an SRNI, you know, norepinephrine suppressant.
Yeah.
It's a slightly different type of antidepressant. And when that was in clinical trials on the campus in Indianapolis, where Eli Lilly is situated, one of the healthy volunteers with no mental illness, no history, hung herself. Okay?
Right.
And they proceeded to, I was told, you know, I was leaked the information that Lily sort of did a whisper campaign to everyone that she really was mental, you know, so that it wouldn't look like it was a drug. And then, of course, you know, they went on to make all their money with Cymbalta. Well, there's a couple of studies I've seen, not necessarily in the U.S., but in Europe, where it was given as a urinary drug, you know, because it also has some bladder effects so that this cohort would not have any way have had mental problems, because it was given for like a bladder thing, and they had the suicides. And they said, you know, subject after subject told the researchers, I don't know why, I just feel like killing myself, okay?
Right.
And, you know, and that's Cymbalta. You know, to me, I've been writing about this over 10 years, and I just can't understand why, you know, we don't build some traction, why, you know, I guess it's money, you know, but it's so clear that these drugs are behind this weird, you know, we never used to have suicides like this.
Right.
You know, they say in some places in the United States, over a quarter of the population is on the so-called happy pills, the SSRIs. Okay.
Right.
If they really prevented suicide and made people happy, why is suicide continuing to rise? It's never been higher. You know.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's the money. And how many doctors in this country were bribed when we tracked it down? I mean, I worked with Senator Grassley's staff in tracking down the money going to, like, the pharma front groups and stuff. And they were held up totally by this money from the drug companies. And so all these programs that they would always put out programs that would drug kids off-label, meaning it wasn't, these drugs weren't approved for kids. And that's
right,
how they
right.
managed to get that going. You know, they'd put out guidelines to put these kids on all these drugs. Like, the most famous I came across was the bipolar ones. And that
right.
was, what's that group? It's for children and kids, adolescent, child psychiatry.
Oh,
adolescent,
I know the one.
Something.
I think I know the one you mean. Could it be the Child and Adolescent Bipolar Foundation?
Well, that's one of them. Yeah, and they would put out guidelines then, and they'd tell them to prescribe all these kids to little kids, in toddlers even, you know, and tell you what dose to give them. If that didn't work, add this, and then add this. And they were all drugs that weren't even approved for kids, but because they came out in these journals of these groups, which I'm saying
right.
total front groups, you know, people would do it. And I wrote this one article one time, and I kept adding the drugs they told you to add. And by
right,
the end, this kid would be on $47,000 worth of drugs for a year. And I said, what other field of medicine would a parent spend $50,000 on drugs for a disease that could not even be verified? You know, it's so
well,
insane.
You're so
and
right. You know, it is
damaging
you're
the
part
of
the
brain that affects the emotion. You know, and so these kids, they're ruining their brains by feeding them all these drugs for years and years and years.
I'm sure you
and
know our buddy David Keel.
Most
David
of the time
Keel.
It's billed to us with Medicaid and stuff, you know.
Well, they're just looting the checks. You know, people don't see where this necessarily affects them, because if, you know, let's say the mom gives the kid $47,000 worth of pills a year, well, how does that affect you? Well, it affects you in several ways. If the kid is on Medicaid, then there goes your taxes, okay? And if it's private insurance, your premiums are going to go, you know, so if it we all suffer from that. Even if
absolutely.
We don't care about the little kid, which I do, you know. You remember
like they're saying that the Social Security disability thing is going broke and all this stuff, but what they aren't telling the people, it's not the disability payments that they're paying for this, it's the cost of all these medical treatments and these psych drugs and stuff for these patients that get taxed to the taxpayer too. And so it's not the cost of the program, it's that these companies are ripping Medicaid off.
You know, I'd like to talk a little, Evie, about these sneaky front groups that you referred to, because they are getting worse. They're brazen. They've become emboldened. And, of course, many people have heard of NAMI, which is kind of the mother of all, you know, Satan front groups. But, you know, there are other ones, too. And I'd like to really talk about that, because I think they fool a lot of people.
Well,
and, you know, what the front groups do is when a new drug comes out that's brand name, there's huge money in it until the patent runs out. And even if that drug is inferior to one that's gone off patent, they want their money, you know. So what these groups will do is they'll flood FDA during hearings, and they'll bring these professional patients, you know, who will say, oh, without this drug, I can't leave the house. You know, without this drug, you know, I can't hold a job. And they're pimping, you know. And
absolutely.
And usually, you know, and then they go to the state, you know, formulary people, and they say the same thing. And the state, you know, is looking at, like, well, let's say, take lithium as an example. Let's say you really did have bipolar, okay? lithium mm-hmm. probably costs, what, 5 cents a pill or something. And then
right.
here's, well, this drug costs, certainly over $1,000 a month, but, you know, without this, I'm going to die of whatever. And so the state groups will look at the disparity, and to a large extent, they've waved through these expensive brand-name drugs that pharma's front groups have said, you know, people will die without, and it's such a sham, and it's an insult to any taxpayer.
Right, and we found out when we tracked those formula groups, that they were being bribed by the drug companies, too. They were on the payrolls for
definitely, definitely. In fact, there, you remember the whole Texas, algorithm thing?
Right,
and,
right.
And the Risperdal suit and the Johnson & Johnson. I don't remember all the details because so many of these scandals are similar. But the gist of it was that they were taking these people for fancy dinners, on vacations. They were just bribing the people in charge of that. And I went to an APA convention, you know, the American Psychiatric Association, and I sat next to a psychiatrist, a lady, and she said, the Paxil rep took my whole office to a Caribbean island. And my jaw mm-hmm. just dropped. I'm like, what? Well, of
yeah.
course they're going to, you know, and I'm sure these people never think that it, at some level you're actually causing death because you are waving through dangerous drugs, making them prescribed for people who don't need them or shouldn't have them, and you're just thinking Caribbean vacation, you know?
Right, for my whole family. Yeah, it's awful. And, you know, after we tracked that all done and then, like, the front group started posting, you know, what they got from drug companies and stuff, then it's just like they don't care anymore. We know it, but they still keep taking that money.
Well, no, you're right. And it's almost like when you go to these meetings now, they're obliged to show a few disclosure slides before they do their spiel. And you'll
yeah.
see, you know, Merck, GSK, Eli Lilly, Pfizer, Johnson. And, you know, it's like, okay, now that I've told you all the people that pay me, let's forget that. And you know, it's
yeah.
it's like you said, they don't care. Well, I care. I think it's obscene. I just think it's... You know, now, let's talk a little bit, because I know you covered very well the teen screen. And at that point,
yeah.
I was not even writing as much as you were. And you totally covered, that which was headed by a NAMI person. Can you refresh people's
yes,
memory about teen screen? Because I want to say what's happened since then.
Well, as far as I know, I think it is. I think it was maybe even pushed in that bill that for Obamacare that they pushed through. I think they got the Mothers Act, what I put in there, how they were, you know, wanting drug pregnant women, and we fought against so much, you know. But I think in the end they ended up sticking it in the Obamacare bill, that they could do that, screen out pregnant women for mental disorders. You know, and they started out saying they wanted to do it for postpartum depression. But then when you got into it, they wanted to screen all pregnant women because they're going to label something on them that they're mentally ill. And they have to have these drugs. And I think they got that through. And Teen Screen, I think they put it under a different name or something and eventually got that in there, too. I think a lot of the schools are screening for mental illness.
Well,
I know when I
want
track
to point
down,
out to, you know, listeners who may not know the whole drug game the way that Evie and I do, screening is, I would say, 99% of the time it's a marketing device. It's not veiled. It sounds like public health, like, oh, we care, we don't want you to suffer. 99% of the time it's marketing, because if you screen people, you're going to find what you're looking for, you're going to scare them into thinking they have what you're looking for, and it's not from the CDC, it's from Big Pharma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a completely separate topic, but very parallel, when they screen for prostate cancer, according to a guy way up there in the American Cancer Society who wrote a wonderful book on this, they're in the mall and they're like, you know, let's screen you for prostate. It's always a marketing device, and they're going to find what
yep.
they're looking for. You know, so the screening, the teen screen and the mom thing were they were implying that there was so much mental illness that if we don't screen, they're going to end up like dying or killing themselves. And so this is like an act of mercy. And it was pure opportunism. And they were, with the kids, the teen screens, trying to find kids, who didn't have any symptoms and felt fine, but we know that you're, moving in this direction. It's almost like mind control. It's like,
well, right, because we had to really fight to get to finally get a copy of that screening tool they would use. And what they were asking was questions that every single teenager would react the same way to. Say, if do you feel embarrassed when you have to stand in front of a group and give a talk? Well, of course you do. Every kid did. I remember that. Normal things. But they would they couldn't answer no because it'd be impossible unless they were outright lying, because every kid, these things that they had on there would have felt like this. And that did in no way meant they were depressed. It meant they were normal adolescents who had these normal feelings that you work through in school. It wasn't a sign of mental illness. It was just normal things that every adolescent would feel like. And they were, and then they'd go home, and they were doing this at first without even telling the parents. And then the parents, they'd go home and tell the parents they're mentally ill. You know, and this is so out of hand to have the schools doing this kind of thing. But I think they have it set up now that they do.
Well,
and,
you know,
and, you
it's
know,
shameless.
Schools,
it's just shameless.
In some states, you can go and get those mental health drugs without telling your parents now. Now, if you put these kids on all these mental health drugs and your parents don't even know it, when they have these side effects and stuff, you don't even know what they're from. They start acting crazy like they do. And the parents are stuck there. They don't even know they're on them.
No, it's criminal. It's just criminal.
It is criminal.
You know, there's two groups that have kind of supplanted Teen Screen, and one is called Red Flags, and the other is called Active Minds. And I've researched them both to a certain extent and found that they're pharma-funded, and the Red Flags is in the schools, and it has a whole thing about they want to scare the parents, like, well, your kid may have X, Y, and Z, and we'll catch it early. Early intervention is almost, by definition, a marketing ruse. There's nothing I'm aware of. Even breast cancer, even most breast cancers, like the DCIS, are not urgent. Whenever you hear from a message on TV or, you know, from pharma that urgent, you know, you have to do this, that you're at risk, you're in danger, you may feel fine, it's always marketing. And,
right.
You know, and with these kids, you know, how about let the kid grow up? Because once the kid's on the drug, then they're going to say, oh, you know, there's the symptoms. They're never going to say what the kid is doing now is a side effect of the drug. They're going to say
right.
That's proof that the kid needed the drug. And then they're going to put them on a cocktail, you know. And I personally
mm-hmm.
know kids who are like, you know, 18 or 20, and maybe they've been on the ADHD since they were like 5. And
right.
They're zombies. They're just zombies. And
yes.
You know, they're going to have a really hard time going off if they can ever go off the drug cocktails, because then you're going to get the rebound neurological stuff.
Oh, sure. Because they believe them. You know, these people got put on their white coat and stuff, and they believe everything they tell them. You know, and I was hooked into that psychiatric crap for 13 years. They diagnosed
yourself?
Me as bipolar when I was like 22 or something like this. Well, I know, looking back, exactly why I was bipolar, and I told them I was bipolar. I was taking speed and staying up for days, and then I couldn't go to sleep, so then I took to drinking wine and going to sleep. And what brought me to them was finally I woke up one morning, and here's this empty bottle of wine and a long suicide note. And I'm like, what? You know, and I'm all scared. So I go to the shrink, and I tell them that this is what's causing it. They don't
right.
tell me get off those drugs or anything. They say I'm bipolar because I'm high, because I'm on speed. Then I crash. Any speed freak will tell you when you come off speed after 2-3 days, you're going to wake up depressed. That's just known. But it's not a mental illness. Get off the speed and don't drink and you won't have it. But they kept me diagnosing me that for like 13 years. Well, I slowly became an alcoholic and then went to treatment for that and then got the right kind of treatment. Get off the alcohol and drugs and then get treatment for my adult child and codependency issues, which accounted for the poor behavior of mimicking what I saw growing up. You know, I had to unlearn those. And woof, don't you know there was no more mental illness?
Well, you know, there's no money in telling a patient you're fine, you need no drugs, or go to, you know, a 12-step
program. Well,
right,
they never once told me to go to AA when I'd go. And I'd never deny how much I was drinking off and on. And they never once said, well, do you think maybe you should stop drinking and go to AA or something? Never. Just come to them and rattle off all my woes and get my new prescriptions every month.
You know, you wrote a great recent piece about this whole institution of pharmacology for addiction, and, you know, how I think you had a quote in there from one of the good guys, and he said that the solution to alcohol dependence is not another drug. Does that ring a bell? Wasn't that a quote that you had there?
Right. I wrote this article about how now they are drugging you right out for alcoholism and addictions. And they're putting you on drugs that you're going to have to stay on for life, and they are expensive. And then I went and did research on the Internet with these groups that were complaining that they were put on these drugs, and they couldn't get off them. And how the doctors had this set up, they had, the one girl told me she had to go once a month to the doctor to get the drugs, and that was a $100 charge. And then she decided she was going to try to go off them herself, and she was weaning herself off. And then when she went, the doctor told her, no, if you don't come to get come for an appointment once a month, pay that $100, that he wouldn't keep prescribing her drugs. So she was forced to go. Yeah, a regular racket, but
wow.
They put them up, that they
wow.
get $100 just for writing those scripts. And they keep them on it for life. I mean, the Internet is full of these boards that these people got put on them drugs and they can't get off.
And we could talk more about this alcoholism and drug thing, but another one that I've studied, because since I last really talked to you at great length, I've done a lot of research into the opiates, and the the OxyContin and all that. And what I discovered, and I have never been a person that, uses, I've never, even you go to the dentist, I've never had those myself. And I didn't know much about it. But I quickly discovered that what Big Pharma did is it paid doctors to change guidelines so that instead of, so the first drug of choice in certain patient groups, like, for example, the elderly who have a lot of pain, the first choice was now opiates rather than like a Tylenol. And I literally,
right.
There's a great reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and his name is John Fauber, and he's the one that uncovered all this payola, where they changed the guidelines, and they literally said, when you have a patient, with lower back pain, don't give them Tylenol, give them an opiate, because
right.
Tylenol might upset their stomach. And I'm sure they did that, the pill mills and, giving
mm-hmm.
the, pain pills for things that it used to be. They were only given for basically post-surgery and cancer, terminal cancer.
The strongest, right.
But they began giving them for everything. Well, then what happens? Okay, people get hooked because it's not the person, that they are addictive drugs. It's not the person. It's not their, it's the drug. Well,
right.
Then they're going to turn to street heroin.
Yes, because
because
then the FDA put out guidelines that couldn't have over this many prescriptions and stuff like this. They have them so hooked on them that, that's where all the heroin addicts are coming from, because the heroin addicts, the heroin's cheaper nowadays. And so they go off them drugs, and they couldn't get the pain pills, so they turned to heroin. And that's where the heroin epidemic has come from.
And
they're killing us in 100 different ways. And the elderly, I forget, I wrote an article on that too not long ago about how many elderly are dying from overdosing from pain pills and stuff. It's just unbelievable. And it's like we can't stop them. I mean, the drug companies get arrested for doing these scams. They have these trials. They get busted by whistleblowers, I think Glasgow paid $4 billion 1 year,
mm-hmm,
for
mm-hmm.
pushing these drugs on people that cause these problems. And they just keep doing it.
They do. And you know what I heard sometimes is that the two effective mechanisms that they've never tried that I think would work is, one, you take that CEO and you march him off to jail. Okay, that would change things
right.
really quickly. Okay?
Right. They've killed
the
a lot of people.
The other thing is, I'm sorry?
I said, they've killed a lot of people. They belong in jail.
And they're criminals. And then the other thing that you do is you take the Pfizer or the Merck or whoever it is, and you say, okay, we are no longer letting you on the government plans. The TRICARE and the VA and the Medicare and the Medicaid until you clean up your corrupt act. You know how quickly they clean up their corrupt act?
Sure they would.
But
they won't do it. I mean, look at
what
they're doing to the military.
And they tell me it's like the banks, Evie. They say, they're too big to fail. What will we do without Lipitor or something like that? We need them. We need that, and they know they're too big to fail, and so that's why they're really gangsters,
gangsters.
They catch them, they find them, they keep doing it. Who was it? I think it was who made Neurontin? Was Park Davis, and then it went to Pfizer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, Pfizer, I believe it was them.
Yeah, it was the,
Was got a second, like, Department of Justice, you know, charge while they were already on, under another one. In other words, like, they didn't even wait for one to expire. You know, it's like they have those corporate agreements, you know, well, we're going to be good, we're not going to do it again. And they literally did it again while they were under one of those agreements. So it's they are very, you know, I feel sometimes it's hopeless, you know?
Well, it is, because these regulatory agencies are all on the take, too. I mean, when a president comes in, he gets to appoint who goes up to the top of the regulatory agency. And so the pharma people come in, and they're, you know, from top pharma groups, and they move in and take over that regulatory agency. And then they let it get away with murder, literally. I mean, the vaccine industry is the same thing, like with the CDC. Now, George Bush Jr. had this one gal running that CDC vaccine industry, and she pushed through all the vaccines to get on the schedule and stuff. And one of the main ones was Gardasil, which is full of lies that they pushed through and everything. And she leaves. Obama comes in, appoints somebody. She leaves and goes right over there to Merck to be a vice president in their vaccine industry. I mean, that's her reward
not
for what
even
she did.
Hiding it. I know.
No, not anymore. No, no.
Wasn't it Julie over and over?
It's just awful. And it's the same with every regulatory agency that govern these industries that are so corrupt. They let them get away with all this stuff. Because the revolving door, they just come and go. And the same with members of Congress. They get done with Congress, they go get these great, big, huge lobbying jobs for these companies and make millions and millions of dollars.
Remember that guy, Billy somebody, and he left the Congress and he started heading up the pharma, you know,
they're in the middle of investigating one of the drugs they put out or something, or devices or
and
something.
And he just went over the other side. No, it's the revolving door. And the hardest part about the revolving door, and I don't even know how I'd solve it, but I know it has to be solved, it's not just money. Because, you know, sometimes it's friendship and cronyism. And I'm thinking specifically of this Rick Perry, governor of Texas, and his chief of staff left for Merck. And then the chief of staff comes back to Rick Perry and he says, hey, how about you vaccinate every girl under 12 in Texas with Gardasil? You know, because it'll make him. And now that isn't even a money thing. Of course, the chief of staff will make money, but what he's really leaning on is he's not bribing Perry, he's leaning on the friendship, you know?
Yeah. And who knows what that friendship had on outside of the office? I mean, we don't know.
And, you know, talking about the vaccines, and, you know, this really shocked me. A few years ago, I was at this American Psychiatric Association meeting, and Nora Volko, who is the head of NIDA, National Institute on Drug Abuse, announced to the group that they were working on and would soon have a vaccine for alcoholism. Okay.
Yeah, right.
And I'm telling you, my jaw dropped, okay? Because anybody who works with the addicted, you know.
They're all in there for the same thing. And she's one of them, you know, that came out a long time ago now. She was the first one that I think found out that those antipsychotics shrink your brain or something like that. But she kept that hidden, you know. I mean, she didn't go really public with it, you know, which we would have known like 10 years sooner or something. That those antipsychotics were doing that to the brain and stuff, but she found it and she kept it basically hidden. Very little was said about it. You know.
Now that I did not know. I have followed her. She works very closely with industry. It's an offense to me as a taxpayer, but I'm also very offended by the actual name of that institute, National Institute on Drug Abuse. Okay.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Not that we're making a judgment, right? How about
they changed the DSM too? You know, to downgrade alcoholism to different levels and stuff so they could do this. Because they're saying, you know, like, well, the alcohol abuse, if you take the drug that they tell you to take, supposedly you won't drink. And I said, well, what is that going to do? You know, that's all they did to me was made me so I couldn't drink but didn't address my other behaviors and stuff that went along with this. That there's definitely going to come the day I'm not going to take that drug so I can go and drink as an alcoholic. I mean, that's all we want to do, just giving us a drug, you know, that makes it so we don't want to. Well, an alcoholic without any treatment or anything is going to be the same person they were when they were drinking. They're going to go and drink eventually, and the family will have all that back again, all the problems and all the behaviors and all that. They'll have to live with it for life.
Of course they will.
That's what they're setting up alcoholics, addicts to do.
you know, I urge anybody who's got an addiction or, let's say, a dependency to alcohol or drugs, I urge you to explore the 12 steps, because the 12-step community is a free, non-drug, non-cult, it's not a cult, group of peers that will save your life. If you have a problem with alcohol or drugs, it is the only thing that's ever really worked. And the medical industry doesn't really like it because nobody makes any money off of it. And
well,
we help each other,
site,
we
know,
save each
Now on their site, on the FDA site and stuff, it'll say that, well, AA could be helpful. You know, as they're saying, prescribe all these drugs. It's not, you know, before, like when I had my treatment centers, AA, you had to go. I made sure they went. And they had to verify me that went. I mean, I knew it worked. That's what I went for. And so now they make it just as an afterthought, you know. You might find AA helpful. AA is the answer for this alcoholism. There has never been anything that has helped as much as AA. But I will have to say, now that they start drugging everybody, you know, not for the alcoholism. When you go into treatment now, they're all on the payroll. When I went to treatment, you couldn't get a drug for nothing. I mean, you had to beg to get a doggone aspirin.
Right. And now they're making money.
Now
they
put them on all these drugs. I went to AA when I moved here to Green Bay. Half these people are so messed up that years ago we would have told them that you need to leave and come back when you're straight and sober. But they walk out of there and they say the doctors put them on this. You know,
well,
and it throws the whole meetings off.
You know, you talked in this recent article you wrote about this mental health, what is it, the Mental Health Parity Act of 2007, and what that basically did is it monetized addiction and alcoholism so that if a doc, if they could get you on a drug, then they could bill insurers for it. And so then we began losing that peer. It used to be, you know, because you and I go back maybe a ways in history here, where you'd go into the drug, you know, a 12-step recovery situation, and they'd have you sit in a chair for 24 hours to make sure you really wanted help, okay? There's no, you know, they're not going to give you a drug. They're not going to, you know, give you a fluffy pillow. But if you really want to not die of drugs and alcohol, they're going to help you. Well, then along comes pharma, and they're like, well, here's a pill, here's a pill. And they, to a large extent, concocted this dual diagnosis. I think, I'm not saying that mental illness does not exist. I mean, it does exist, of course. But this dual diagnosis is just a way to sell drugs. And it's like you said, with speed and alcohol, oh, you know, I'm up, I'm down, I'm long, I'm short.
Right.
Well, yeah, you know, eat right, go get off the, you know, you'll be normal. But these docs will say, well, you know, in addition to your alcoholism, you're depressed, you got bipolar. Bull, Puggy, bull.
Right, exactly. And, and that's what, like, at the AA meeting, you know, the couple that I went to, everybody was so out of it. Well, this was back in 2005. Everybody was so out of it that I didn't get any enjoyment out of the meeting. I really didn't. I mean, it was like I'm sitting out in a bar with these speed freaks and stuff, or people all downed out talking to somebody that's using. Just rattling on about nothing.
No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I wasn't getting anything out of this, and I thought to myself, well, Evelyn, you should stay here and try to straighten this out. And I looked how many people that were there and were on downers and speed, and it was like, you can't do it, Evelyn. This meeting's too big that you can't. They're already taking in so much. And this is before they came out with the drugs, and out there giving them, saying that you take this and you won't drink or use drugs. And like I said, online, they're just forming these people begging to get off these drugs.
You know, when Bill Wilson invented AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, in the 30s, it was kind of, there was no gray areas. It's like, there's a quote in some of the materials that says you forfeited your right to chemical peace of mind. Okay, there's no going in there and saying, well, I can't drink, but I could have Neurontin or something. No, it's all over. You know, it's all over.
Right.
And, you know, part of the way it works, it's so wonderful, and I have seen this in people I know, is that just, you know how they always tell you about your brain chemistry? You know, you need the drugs because your brain chemicals. Well, they've done, you know, brain scans of people who've left 12-step meetings, and their brains are rearranged. So it's like being around recovering people who understand what you're going through because they're also, you know, just like you. It's medicine. And it's non-drug medicine, but it really helps. You know, that's how the 12 steps helps, because it ends that isolation, that feeling like, what is wrong with me? Am I the only one that's, you know, drinking a fifth every day? You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And, you know, it really, you know, they another thing, you know, with the insurance costs, we talk about these expensive pills, but do you remember, Evelyn, when they used to talk about insurance wouldn't pay for talk therapy because it was too expensive? Remember that?
And how ridiculous. My whole treatment program for 6 weeks, inpatient program, 3 groups a week, all one-on-ones you need, and a family weekend, and then 12 weeks of aftercare was only $2,600 for the whole thing.
And not to mention that you take a drug like Abilify, which at least until recently they were talking $1,200 a month. Well, what's
right.
going to cost more, talking to a therapist or taking this ridiculous drug? You know, it's come on, you know. And
that,
of course,
and it ain't going to work, so.
And
the prescribing
of
antipsychotics to everyone for everything.
Yes,
and our little kids
yes.
for ADHD and stuff. And that just kills me when they went down to the toddlers, because it's like, everybody knows about the terrible twos. That's just, it's just a fact of life that kids go through the terrible twos. So, like, when you were talking about Rebecca Riley, I really researched that a lot, too. And that was so sad, that little girl. She would go to school so messed up, the teacher, she could, the principal would have to go out and get her off the bus sometimes. She could hardly walk at 4 or 5 years old and you know, couldn't even hardly look at you. Couldn't undo her pants to go to the bathroom. They had her so drugged up like this. And then she died, yeah, from an overdose. Yeah.
You
and,
know,
the, and the teachers and stuff had been warning and even called her doctor and said they didn't see any bipolar in any of these kids, these three kids.
It's murder.
But when it all came out,
pure...
it was 2 years old. Every one of them got started putting on them drugs.
And Evelyn, tell them this thing about the babies, you know, the babies spitting up or the babies getting the GERD medicine.
GERD, yeah. Normal babies that spit up, you know, which do. I mean, my first baby, I was telling you that she used to, for about a week, she would spit her whole bottle up, and it was a joke to us. You know, my husband's holding her, and she spits up all on his hair on his chest, and it was a joke to us, you know. And she grew out of it in a week, you know. We didn't run to the doctor, this normal stuff, but now putting him on that Reglan, for one, they were putting him on, I looked into that, and that thing really causes problems. I mean, it was actually like a psych drug to begin with or something. And so they're giving this to little babies and screwing up their whole system. And then, you know, giving them all these vaccines. I mean, if there is any women out there today that still allow them to inject that hepatitis B vaccine on the day of birth, man, I can't believe there are, but I bet there are. I mean, who would inject an infant with that? I mean, they get it from anal sex or from sharing needles. Why would you
well,
ever
and,
let
and
them
it's like the Gardasil.
Baby?
It's like, you know, if you get a pap smear, you don't need Gardasil if you're a woman, you know, unless
Absolutely.
You're, I mean, for the most. And then they're trying to take this drug that isn't even necessary here if you get a pap smear, and they're trying to make money on it in the third world, okay, where poor people live. It's like, okay, we've got malaria, tetanus, river blindness, dung fever, okay, Ebola,
yeah.
and you really think we're worried about cervical cancer, which is a slow-moving, easily detected, prevent. It kills people, but not like these other big ones, you know?
What did you ever hear of a woman, a girl in her teens that had cervical cancer? I don't know of one. I've never heard of one. And so they said when they brought it out, it was only supposed to work for like 5 years. So when are you giving this to, they were giving it as young as 9 years old, and now giving it to boys for genital warts? I never knew anyone that ever had genital warts.
Nor did I. And the thing is Big Pharma has, you know, done a real disservice to itself, because it clouded the difference between, let's say, a life-saving vaccine that might be like a whooping cough, maybe, and I'm saying maybe, versus a totally optional and unnecessary vaccine like a Gardasil. And by pretending that we say so and we're good and we're pharma taker, they ruined their credibility 100%.
Oh, absolutely. And then you got to think about how much those cost, too. It's like $400 for them three Gardasil shots. You know,
yeah,
and
no,
they
fixed
it up so that the government, us, will pay for them shots for people that don't have enough money to make sure that they get them, you know, so they'll be healthy. And now the scariest part is we always talk about with vaccines, autism, because that's the most drastic thing that it's caused, you know, the most life-threatening thing that it's caused to all these families and stuff. But all the other illnesses, too, like diabetes and asthma and ear infections and allergies and all these things, from these vaccines with all these chemicals and stuff in it. And one thing I was saying, that most people don't know that these vaccines have aborted tissue in them, DNA from an aborted baby. No, and they think that people are going to stick these in their children once they know this. And like now these states, I mean, this is a very a horrible conspiracy. These states passing laws that say that all kids have to have all those vaccines with no exemptions, forcing parents to shoot that poison into their kids. And you
well,
watch
yeah,
kids,
we don't know what's
my,
in them. And, you know, another one, too.
My grandson never got any vaccines. And he has had one day sick in bed his whole life. He's 10 years old. That is it. You look at people that their kids get all these vaccines. They are sick constantly. Stuff. They are destroying our health with that and the psych drugs and the geoengineering. They are destroying our minds in this country.
Well, and another one too, Evelyn, that I'm not sure if it's true, but I heard a pretty good source on it is. That there seems to be peanuts in some of these vaccines, and that they say that that's where all these peanut allergies come from.
Exactly.
We didn't used to have it when I was growing up. I never heard of it, you know?
Me either. Mm-mm. And in my school, there was one girl, my whole school, that had diabetes, and I think one child with asthma. And all the kids went from kindergarten to seniors in the school. And when I first started investigating vaccines, the CDC was saying there was no epidemic in autism, that everybody always had it. Well, I thought about it, and I should have had 7 kids in the little town Niagara I grew up in, and there wasn't a one. And that's when I knew they were lying back in 2003. And look at it now. It's down to 1 in 40-some kids get autism. This is insane.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. It's, you know, nobody barely heard of it. I mean, yeah, it's not better diagnosis. There's something. But, you know, there's other stuff, too, besides the vaccines that I'm not a mom, but if I were a mom, there are so many things that I wouldn't give to the kids. And that, you know, comes in the category of, like, a lot of the foods now.
Right.
You know, they talk about.
Well, you know, we're going to get cut off here, but I want to thank you so much, and I want to have you back because you know so much about pharma and the food industries and everything like that. Yeah, we need to get into talking about that, too. I mean, you do such a good job reporting on all the food scandals that it's just amazing how they're poisoning us there, too, you know.
Well, thank you for your great, great work, Evie, and let us talk soon again.
Yes, definitely.
All right.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.